Hi, women. Before we dive in today, I need to name something important. This episode, along with all episodes that you will hear until our winter break in mid-December, was recorded before my birth, prior to mid-August. Since then, our family has walked through the unimaginable. Our son was stillborn, and we are in deep mourning. As these shows air, you'll hear and see me pregnant, which now feels incredibly painful and weird, given that you are holding the sacred knowledge of what came after. So please forgive the dissonance. These stories still deserve to be shared and heard. We welcome your prayers, your loving thoughts, and your support as we navigate this spiral of such deep grief. I hope you find resonance and nourishment in this conversation today. Thank you.
When a woman wants sovereign support, it can seem impossible to find. Where are the midwives, the birth photographers, the chiropractors, the childbirth educators, and the healers that really get it? Well, we are all finally in one place. I'd like to introduce the Matcha Birth Directory, Free Birth Society's newest offering to support the birth liberation movement. It's the first of its kind. Do you serve women? Get listed. Do you want support? Become a member. We envision a world where networking the sovereign birth paradigm is easy and abundant for all. Join us. Just go to www.matchabirthdirectory.com.
Welcome to Free Birth Society. I'm Emily Saldea, and this is where we break the spell of medicalized birth, remember what's been forgotten, and rise together into our birthright to live, birth, and mother as sovereign women.
Welcome, Melissa.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, I'm excited to get into this today. I am purposely ignorant about you and your work because I just like to show up and flow and get to know my guests in real time. And so, you know, as I was just saying before recording, there's obviously so many parallels of what you do and what I do and our shared interest in, let's say, the suppression and revival of the healing arts, right? And of all of these things that are available to us through nature or women's lineage wisdom or whatever. We're kind of in the same pool as we'll get into the history of this in a moment with homeopathy. But before we do, I want to just frame this or have you frame it for, you know, the woman who's tuning in, who has never dabbled, who knows nothing about this. Who are you? Who the heck are you? What are you up to? What is homeopathy? You know, and really kind of I'll pitch to you, like, why should we care about this?
I am a homeopath. I started off studying to be a naturopath. So loved herbs. You know, my dad's a doctor. My mom's a hippie. I thought, yep, I'll be a naturopath. I'll meet in the middle. And always loved, you know, learning about psychology, disease, and I guess that real metaphysical link between them. So I was doing naturopathics and I had this lecturer who really loved homeopathy. He used to try and slip it into all our lectures, even though he was teaching anatomy and physiology. But da, da, da. Anyway, homeopathy. And so, you know, one day he's saying to me, you know, you should really do it. You'd really love it. And because I'd never heard of it, I was completely uninterested. I thought, if this was any good, I would already know about it. And therefore, I just don't care. It's obviously, like, you know, a bit too woo-woo for me. And it ended up, my sister was really sick. She was chronically in and out of hospital every year, every couple of months. And she would get a UTI. So if she had sex, she'd get a UTI. She'd end up in hospital on IV antibiotics for about a week. So it was really full-on presentation. So she's, yeah, from 16 to early 20s, this cycle is just going on and on. You can imagine, like, how destroyed, you know, the guts getting from just all these antibiotics. And at the end of that, you know, nearly
shame and complication of sex turning into that every time. Whoa. Yeah.
And so she has, like, the highest level doctors who specialize in infectious disease, you know, at this private hospital. And they've got massive file on her and they're going through and they're saying, we honestly don't understand why this is happening, what's happening. It's a different infection each time. It's not even consistent in its presentation. We don't know what's going on with your body. And they said, you just need to be on prophylactic antibiotics every day. So taking a preventative antibiotic forever, and you need to not have sex. Just like, what? She's like 21 years old. How can you sort of sentence her to that? And so then I really start digging, you know, so she's gone to the best naturopaths, the best Chinese medicine, you know, acupuncture. She has to quit her job. She's grounding. She's meditating. She's doing like every single thing that you can think of. And this lecturer says something about homeopathy in class. I say, all right, that's it. If you cure my sister's chronic condition, I will change my degree over. He's like, yep, all right, when can she meet with me? So they meet, 19 minutes of talking, and he wants to know all about like her childhood, right? Like, tell me like your relationship with your parents, you know, what foods do you crave? What things do you really hate? You know, any emotions that you've got under the surface, you know, what's going on? And he was probing around. In the end, he gives her a bottle of Staphysagria. And his hypothesis is that her suppression of anger and resentment was leading to these UTIs and the constant genitourinary issues. And then when she had sex, because sex is such an intimate, you know, sort of emotional and vulnerable thing, that would kick off, you know, the response in her body. And anyway, he gave her this stuff and it completely just changed everything for her. You know, she was bladder incontinent at that point. That all started to change. Discharges came out. A lot of anger comes up to the surface and she just moved through it. And so that was my first experience with homeopathy, doing something that I just thought, what the hell did I just witness? Like, I'm confused. Like, surely that's a placebo, because she just took drops under the tongue, like this little bottle of things. And it was 2 drops under the tongue every morning, every night. And I thought, how is it causing all of these changes? Like, even in that area, I'm like, so then I went to see him as a patient myself. After seeing that, I was like, oh my goodness, I am hooked. Then I borrowed every book from the library and I wanted to dig into the history. I wanted to find out what is homeopathy and why have I overlooked it? Why does nobody talk about it when it seems to be like the holy grail to me?
Mm.
And that really led me to, you know, find out things. Say, when we talk about the history of homeopathy, across the US, you guys had, at the turn of the last century, you guys had over 100 homeopathic hospitals. And these were massive buildings, you know, through New York, Massachusetts, like all around. And some of them had up to 3,000 beds, and they were purely homeopathic hospitals, just looked after by homeopaths. And you just think, like, you know, I went to Washington, D.C. a couple of months ago. We were doing a little tour around the US and I saw some of the old hospitals and they were huge. They were stunning. And in D.C., you guys have a big statue and it's a monument to Samuel Hahnemann. It's full, like, standalone, huge thing. And you think, why would America honor, one, he's the only medical doctor to be there, and he's not even American. The guy was German. That's how big homeopathy was, that the presidents even wanted to honor his contribution to humanity. It's like amazing. And so then you dig into, okay, well, what even is homeopathy? We know it's got this deep, vast history and all the things they say it can do, but what actually is it? And it is an energetic system of medicine. So I say it's most like acupuncture, really, when looking at moving energy around the body, unblocking things. Essentially, homeopathy acknowledges that we all have a vital force, a field, essentially. And when you think at the moment of conception, you've got the sperm reaches the egg, and it's like this energetic, you know, sort of blast of light that they see under the microscope, that zinc spark, that creation. And it's this divine energetic blueprint which has the intelligence to then go forward and knit together a baby. No conscious effort from the mother, the vital force takes over. And with that blueprint, you know, we inherit a lot of that blueprint from our parents, hence why, you know, a lot of times we look like them or we look like our siblings, but also our susceptibility to, you know, certain diseases. It's energetic in its roots as to why we are susceptible. And so, you know, modern medicine talks about, genetics, and we just talk about the energetics that are inherited, and they can be switched on and off, you know, those little epigenetic aspects. So, yeah, when we harness from nature certain energetic substances, so in our homeopathic Materia Medica, so I got a book here, and we would have, say, over 100 remedies listed there, and we take them from all different places in nature. So it could be poison ivy, it could be arsenic, the poison, it could be belladonna, the plant, Staphysagria, postilla. We take a crude dose of that plant, so let's say belladonna. We take part of the belladonna, we get it into the pharmacy, and we do this process called dilution and succussion. So you dilute it with water. And if people understand that water also has consciousness and memory, it acts as a conduit. and carries over all of that information. That part is really supported by mainstream science in regards to, Luc Montagnier, the one who won the Nobel Peace Prize for his work in HIV/AIDS. But what he's saying is, if you have put something in water and then you have removed it, and we then study the water is not left the same. There is evidence of what was in there when you pluck it out. Also, mm-hmm. Vader Austin's work, even to Vader Austin, The Memory of Water. And so that's what we are doing with homeopathy. We're using water as the conduit for information, and then we feed it back to somebody's body. And when we mirror up the distortion of the substance with the distortion in their body, it triggers the body. It almost gives the body that vital nudge, that blueprint, that vital force. And it says, get back on track here. And the body pushes back. And that's where the symptoms are overcome. That's where a lot of, traumatic memories, people will be crying about things that happened 10 years earlier. It's energy that's been stuck there. It needs to be moved out. So yeah, we see all manner of physical issues being healed, mental and emotional. People who've had grief, anxiety, depression their whole lives. A lot of it's just stuck. And homeopathy is a stimulus to push their body to respond.
And so isn't there something if you take the wrong remedy, it could give you the symptom of that medicine?
So we'd call that approving, right? If somebody was continually exposing themselves to a frequency that they didn't need, you could potentially start to mess with your field and see something. But generally, if you ask most homeopaths, how often have you given a remedy that's actually caused that for someone?
Right.
It's not really something that happens. And I think it's because people need to have something within them for it to even resonate and do anything. So that's why, a lot of homeopaths, they use things like blends, right? They might put six different remedies in the same bottle and they'll call it a cough blend, or they'll do it like it's a calming mix or something like that. And these ones don't cause issues for people. It's like your body will receive the frequency. It takes what it needs, and the rest sort of is just a non-issue. But even having said that, I'd never recommend people take remedies for no indicated reason for an extended period of time. I think that's just, you just don't want to expose your body to a frequency it doesn't need, really.
So this is frequency healing, and it's rooted in resonance, essentially. Is that a correct way of saying it?
Yep. So say if I had taken the same remedy that my sister took, I didn't have any of those same energetic distortions, so it would have done nothing to me. Whereas, the remedy that I needed, it's very specific. It's got to be individualized. And the only way to find out what someone needs is to know, all right, what are all of the symptoms that you're experiencing? Because all of the disease profiles, they've got correlating remedies that can be given.
Yeah, I find that part really hard. And the woman that does homeopathy with me is very patient with me because I am not very descriptive or aware of
what's important.
Like my common answer is I don't know, it just hurts.
She's like, what sort of pain? Is it stitching pain?
Oh yeah,
the aching pain.
Yay. Like there's a million questions and I don't know the answers. Whereas my husband's a historian, he can deliver the, he's so easy to treat. And I'm just so vague and so ambivalent about all of it. And also to the point of being ambivalent about it, if it weren't for having my own personal lived experiences with myself and with my children of how acute and quickly symptoms can be dissolved or resolved or whatever. This wouldn't have really been something that caught, just like your story. I think this is how people get turned on to it, is they experience it or they sit. And then it's kind of undeniable. So I'd love to hear, actually, on that note, what are some of the most incredible, let's say, miracles you've witnessed or been a part of via homeopathy?
So I started infertility when I graduated. I wanted to have a niche where I had a clear end goal, right? I want to get you pregnant right now. I'm going to do everything that I can with that. So changing women's cycles with homeopathy, when they come to you for fertility treatment, it is so easy to manipulate hormones. Wow. And get them back into balance. And a lot of women, they've been on, you know, contraceptives, a history of being in suppression, stuff like that. When we undo all of that, the bright red blood comes back, you know, from that brown, murky, you know, not regular cycle, or the sort of opposite presentation when it's like a lot of endo, a lot of PCOS, a lot of overdrive in the body, we can really heal that as well. So yes, cases of endometriosis, them losing all of their pain, definitely lots of pregnancies. And against, you know, all odds, when they've done 11 rounds of IVF and then they're told, look, we actually can't even run another round on you because you can't even release eggs anymore. Like, your body's really just not cooperating. They let people go. It's really rare in Australia for people to say, oh no, we won't even try again. Usually they're like, if you'll pay the money, we'll do 20 rounds back to back. And so, yeah, letting them people go, and then they find homeopathy, come into my clinic, and they're pregnant within 4 months, a healthy baby born after that, after 11 cycles of IVF. And so the body has this remarkable capacity to heal if it's stimulated in the right way. So a lot of women also have, you know, the sort of presentation, sort of Lyme-y sort of presentation, chronic fatigue, perfectionist sort of mind, often like overthinking, anxious, can't sleep at night, you know, all of that sort of stuff massively helped with homeopathy. You know, that chronic fatigue just shaken off, you know, whatever is lingering in their body just moved. And a lot of it comes down to their early years in life, right? Very stressful for a lot of them. A lot of responsibility when they were too young. So say whether the parents were really hostile and fighting, and so the kid's nervous system is jacked up.
Sure.
That manifests in a lot of women and men these days, you know, all these compensations that we make for that. So it's a huge one. And people in that position, you know, a good remedy is carcinosin for a lot of those cases, not all of them, but a lot of them. And this actually, you know, if it's unchecked and people live their life in this constantly sort of hypervigilant state with all that sort of stored trauma, cancer is where you often see it turn out. And it can be, you know, people who are that chronically people-pleasing, they'll deny themselves to do everything for other people. And they're often, they're stifling themselves, their creative like expression. And they, yeah, are just going through the motions. And then the body, you know, comes with something like cancer. And it's a massive wake-up call if it, you know, if we can turn it around. But yeah, that's sort of the energetic blueprint. It's this pathological niceness. And we call it like the perfect implosion. People who are so suppressed, they might be in a relationship where, you know, their voice is just not heard. And so every day, you know, they're just not able to really live. Or it can be in a work sense. Like if you've got a carcinosin employee, these are the people who are like above and beyond, and the bosses usually, you know, can take advantage of that. And they just put all of this pressure on these people because it's like, yeah, they'll move heaven and earth to get it done. And they will, because they've tied it up with their self-worth that my job is this. And so, you know, those sorts of things. But you know, like my sister with the Staphylococcus aureus, if there's any history of sexual abuse in people, which, you know, sadly, probably one in three people that I work with, there is a history of something like that, letting that go, like let it up and out of the cells, any lingering resentment or shame or anything to do with that violation, moving that on so they can just completely be free of it. And, you know, people have been in talk therapy sometimes for 2 decades talking over the same trauma and it's still stuck. They can take a couple of doses of a homeopathic remedy and move it through. So it's really all about like getting all of the stuff that you don't need out of your field and then being able to sort of thrive and sort of vibrationally be strong.
So tell me if you think this is true, because I've heard people in the past say that you don't even have to believe in it. You don't even, that it like circumvents or goes above and beyond the mind, that you don't even really have to know the ins and outs of it. You don't have to set some intention on the remedy, you know, that you can just take the right remedy in it and it resolves. Is that
true? Yeah, definitely. Worked with heaps of skeptical husbands, their wives drag them in. And they're like, whoa, you know, and because when you take homeopathics, when it's the well-indicated remedy, things like their dreams in the first week completely changed. And then we have in homeopathy what's called a return of old symptoms. So let's say for the women with a history of chronic tonsillitis, when they take the right remedy, there's a pretty good chance that they're going to have some swelling in the tonsils and they're going to go, oh my gosh, am I getting sick within the week or two that they start taking it? And it's a return. The body is actually going through and sort of healing and reprocessing like the underlying issues that people have had. And so when the husbands see this sort of like really follow the progression and they're like, oh my gosh, because a lot of them, like me, when I did my own personal treatment after my sister's, I didn't know what was expected to happen. So there's no way it could have been, you know, a figment of my mind or the placebo effect on me, because I had no idea what it could do. And so, you know, for me, I took my remedy. I had a history of getting cold sores. I would get cold sores like once every other month. And when I took that remedy, I went to bed. I woke up the next morning. I had 7 cold sores on my lips. Have never had more than one cold sore at a time. And I thought, what the? And I go to uni and I see this lecturer. And among other things that had happened with it, he's like, right, don't suppress it now. He's like, your body's been activated. The vital force, your immune system is pushing it out onto the surface. Yeah. Don't suppress it. I never had another cold sore from that point on. And that was like, you know, like
the cycle.
It completed the cycle. It pushed it out. Whatever was dormant, you know, just lingering in that root ganglion. So yeah, you definitely do not have to believe in it.
I love that. I love that. Okay, so let's travel back a bit. Give us some context of the history. You know, you mentioned, you know, 100 years ago or even more, there was all these hospitals in the U.S. So that assumes that it was a pretty normalized use of medicine. But yeah, just tell us what you know. I don't know anything about this.
Yeah. So the founder, Samuel Hahnemann, so he's a German medical physician. He graduates, but he goes into medicine and he sees what's happening is just really not ideal. So this is the era of heroic medicine, late 1700s. You know, people are doing the bloodletting, they're doing leeches, they're doing mercury, but they're overdosing a lot of people. And yeah, medicine is quite a mess at that point, but they still were clinging to it. Like bloodletting is the answer. And he sort of, after witnessing that, he said, I cannot continue in this. I'll just put this medical degree down. And so he's like, I'm going to translate medical texts. So then he does get a job in the a massive library for this guy, Baron von Brückenfau, and he's translating medical texts. So Samuel Hahnemann is this outrageously smart guy. Like he learned, I think he knew like over 7 languages, like full fluent, like translating texts. So he then had access to all of that information about all the medical discoveries, you know, around the world, because he could speak all these languages. So when he's helping to move these textbooks over, he's learning a lot. And ultimately he's working in this library and he's reading a lot of the esoteric things, you know, so about alchemy, and a lot of the work of people like Isaac Newton. You know, people know his work for, you know, gravity and those sort of more physics things, but he was big on alchemy and that alchemical process of, I guess, when you look at homeopathy, and it is sort of like transmuting energy out, it's completely changing that energetic body. So he was exposed to Paracelsus and a lot of those principles. Now, Paracelsus says something, and it's about whether something is a cure or a poison is in the dose, like how much of it do you give? So back then, when they were using mercury to treat syphilis, which was rampant, you know, lots of people were very, very sick dying with syphilis. It was really full on. When you give a minute dose of mercury, the body can respond to that stimulus and it could produce a healing response. But the problem is they were using like far too much. Even their small dose was far too much. But in homeopathy, we have a remedy called Merc-Sol, and that is derived from the energetics of mercury. So when we are looking at big ulcerations, you know, and rotting, fetid, like, you know, things that syphilis had, you would use Merc-Sol to resolve that. But because it's homeopathic, you don't have the toxicity of the actual mercury as well. All you've got is the healing instructions of that. Because, you know, say in modern medicine, the idea of like cures like, this is this massive principle in homeopathy. You have to use the likeness to stimulate the change. You know, when kids are really hyperactive with ADHD type things and they're just off the walls, If you give them Ritalin, which is a stimulant, it acts with a like cures like, and these kids calm down. They can concentrate. So it's a real like cures like scenario when you use Ritalin in that way. But if you were to give Ritalin, what do you guys call Ritalin? You call it Ritalin? You guys call it another name as well.
Adderall?
Adderall, yep. But when you give that, say,
you're kind of generational. Like when I was a kid, it was called Ritalin, but now people say Adderall.
Yeah, gotcha. But if you were to give Adderall or Ritalin to like a woman who's not in that hyperactive state, which a lot of mums are filling the scripts of their kids because it makes them jacked up. It gives them all this energy and they're losing weight and they're like, da, 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 da. Yeah. So you can really see that you've got to have that resonance for it to work. But even in medicine, the idea that like cures like, that's not new to them. Like they understand that the body does react that way. So Samuel Hahnemann's then going through that. He starts to do his experiments in testing what he's starting to come and find. And that's the whole principle that like cures like, and how much can we dilute the dose but still make it powerful and have the healing effects without the poison. So he's going through all of that. By the time he sort of realizes, wow, this is legitimate, this works. So then he's talking to all the other physicians that he knows about it. And a lot of them are converting, because if you were in that era and then you see homeopathy work, you're like, man, I would totally just choose this non-toxic, like really curative way of practicing. So it just catches on like wildfire. I was reading in George Filthoucas's book, The Science of Homeopathy, that at the turn of that last century, when there was 100 homeopathic hospitals around, 25% of the medical physicians back then were also homeopaths, which is pretty huge. Like one in four, 120 years ago, were homeopaths. When you consider now, most doctors don't have a clue what homeopathy is. Like that got completely stamped out real quick. So you're looking at things back then, you know, they were just treating all the things that people came to them for, you know, as doctors, whether it was like an infected toenail or, you know, they had infections in their body, injuries, they were treating all of it. But where it really caught on huge would probably be the more like epidemic type things, you know, whether it was scarlet fever, you know, cholera was big, Spanish flu. Now we can all have different understandings about like what even is a flu. You know, to the homeopath, we see it as a really productive detoxing type thing. You're getting all of the toxins out with your mucus, your cough. We do think that the body is definitely divinely intelligent. And in regards to contagion theory, it's a bit mixed. We can definitely say that there is something when fields come into contact with each other or people come into contact, there can be a vector of transmission, but it could even be field related, right? Like your energetic body is communicating with someone else. But lots of people were getting very sick and it was the homeopathic remedies that were reviving them. So in like a lot of those old history books, you've got the lines around the homeopath's house was huge for people waiting for a simple remedy, say belladonna for scarlet fever, because people in their house are getting sick. So they were using it then almost like a prophylactic as a prevention. Samuel Hahnemann, in those earlier days, he was looking after a household and the girl, she'd had an injury to her finger and it was like red, swollen, throbbing, maybe infected. And he gave her belladonna for that. Do you know belladonna? Has your family used belladonna? Yep. So it's pretty well-known fever remedy, first signs of inflammation, red swelling, all of that. And so he was giving her that. It was healing up her finger. But at the same time, scarlet fever swept through her house. And I'm pretty sure her family, they were either all infected or they all died. They were definitely all sick. But she was the only one that it completely passed over. So then Samuel Hahnemann gets curious about why is it? And when he looked at the symptoms of scarlet fever, he said, that's what I would use belladonna for. Maybe because she was already taking it, her field was already strong enough, it just passed her over. She didn't even manifest any symptoms. So again, this like cures like, but it's more of a preventative, you know, prophylactic. That's where that was sort of born out of. And then these days, a lot of people use homeoprophylaxis, which is prevention of, you know, infectious diseases. So they might take, you know, the homeopathics for it as babies so that their field's already been exposed to whatever potentially they might come into contact with. But that's where it just really started to grow. We have a lot of elites, you know, the Queen of England who died recently, She wouldn't travel anywhere without her homeopathic first aid kit. And she says that Allium Sepa completely cured her lifelong hay fever. So those, you know, the British royal family, they've always had private homeopaths. Rockefeller had his own private homeopaths. Even though his work really conflicted with homeopathy, obviously he's pretty much the father of pharmaceutical medicine. And here he is in the beginning and he's got some quotes and he's, you know, homeopathy is a progressive and aggressive step in medicine. You know, he was loving it. And then when he realized, I guess, how much money he could make with petrochemical drugs, he sort of backflipped on that. He's like, actually, I think we should take this out of all universities. I don't think people should be taught this. And it was a real sort of stomp down from the top, probably the same way, you know, with birth, hiding all of the good information so that people are reliant on another system and really getting it out of their homes, like learning how to do it. Back in the day, a lot of like the women in the town, like they knew a lot of the basic remedies to use at home. These days, you know, unless you're lucky enough to find it, you know, you're not really in the know about it.
Mm. Yeah.
And he probably kept using homeopathy. Yeah, fully.
He did. Yeah. But just pulled it from the public.
Mm.
Yeah, it's like they, I don't know if this is true or not, but you hear the rumor all the time that like all the big tech like families in Silicon Valley have screen-free homes. Because they know how fucked up it is.
Fully. Yeah, I've heard that. Who was it? Steve Jobs wouldn't let his kid something, yeah, to do with an iPad. And it's like, dear Lord, yeah,
so for sure. Up. Oh, man. Okay. So basically, what era are we saying that it gets just totally squashed? Like, how long does that take? When are we thriving in these hospitals to when you can't find a provider that would promote it?
Yeah, not long after, you know, the 1900s, as we're going up through then. I mean, even during the world wars, definitely in the First World War, they were still sending homeopaths in and as backup. And they were sort of saying, we need them near the front lines. They need to get their supplies there. So around that time, it's still used, but it's just on the downward. And I would say it also correlates with the time that modern medicine started to get going in the way that it did, you know. More antibiotics. And what they could see at the start was, wow, this looks like this is fully working. Like these symptoms are being squashed out. Like people are getting better. But right now we've moved beyond that era and we are seeing the complete downfall of what that sort of medicine can do. You know, I think in my generation, when I was young, I feel like, you know, yeah, like 30, 40 years ago, they were using antibiotics and they would have fully thought like, this is amazing. Like medicine is amazing. Look what we can do. Whereas the parents, you know, now people like me, we're like, man, look how much the antibiotics have messed up people's gut. Look how much more chronic disease we have right now than you had back then. And it's because of a lot of the things that they started introducing. So the steroids, the antibiotics, mm-hmm. even or just all of the interference with the body's processes. They just can't leave the body alone. They just got to constantly interfere.
We grew up with the cultural narrative that antibiotics are the single most significant man-made invention of our times. And I would say no, air conditioning is.
Fair. Very fair.
Definitely air conditioning.
Yeah. Air conditioning, you know. Never led to the gut dysbiosis, not air
quality. Even if it did, it would be worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So much. I've had so much gratitude for it. Well, every summer.
Where are you based in the US?
I'm in Western North Carolina.
Okay. Amazing.
Which is not that bad, but I'm from Florida and we spent a lot of time in Mexico and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But even like I do this women's festival in the summertime where we're all outside and we have this one yurt that has an AC unit and it is just like a godsend for anyone who needs it for 10 minutes. Anyway, but wait, let me get my brain back on track. So, okay. So it happens really, really quickly. Yeah. Antibiotics. Oh my God. Totally. I mean, I remember it just being so common. I know it's so common, but not in my world. I mean, my children have never had it. I haven't taken antibiotics since I was in high school, probably. And same thing, like we're of the same generation. I look around at like my sister who has a chronic immune issue because of all her antibiotics and and just how it's destroyed us. And another cool thing I get to see, and obviously you do too, is the mothers parenting outside of the medical system, supporting their children to heal when otherwise antibiotics would be the move, and watching it work, you know, again and again and again and again and again, and all, and sometimes very serious situations, not just, oh, an ear infection, like some pretty serious stuff I've watched resolve, not actually in my children, but in women I know's children. Which is not always necessarily being supported with homeopathy, though that is one important brand for sure.
Because so many people these days, right, they're doing, if they've got, you know, complex things going on with the kids, chronic health things, they are really, they're looking for the solution that they haven't found. They know that they don't want to use the pharmaceuticals. They know that it's like a short-lived reprieve, but they also do actually need help. And this is like one thing that I have, you know, a lot of people, they sit back and they go, no, the body's, you know, made perfect, just like don't touch it, you know, and everything will be fine. But I have seen, like, I do believe that there'll always be a need for medicine when the body gets out of alignment. Like historically, we've always had medicine women to know how to get back on track. And so, yeah, a lot of the mothers these days, even if they've done everything as holistically as possible, you know, done literally all the things right, but then their kid has eczema from head to toe and they're like, what the, I didn't put any toxins on you, or, you know, but the energetic distortions that they've, you know, even had themselves or inherited. And then you can find, say, in those parents, sometimes they'll say, yeah, well, I did have eczema as a kid and my parents just put cortisone cream on me and it resolved. But now they're dealing with it with their kids because it never really got to the root of the issue. It's all stifled within there. So that information is handed down then to the child. Mm-hmm. But I feel like so many people are looking for homeopathy, but they haven't quite found it yet as like the solution that, because it can let go of all of that generational trauma. And in homeopathy, we talk about these and they're the miasms, and they are huge in healing like chronic disease issues, whether it's eczema, asthma, allergies, autoimmunity. It's like the energetics of the body coming down that family line was already running so strong. And some of the things you see in these, people are like, what? Like things like alcoholism in a family history, schizophrenia, bipolar, chronic depression, you know, a lot of the heavy hitting things, issues with their bones, the structures, like homeopathy definitely acknowledges each of those miasms and aims to correct them. So
cool.
Yeah. It's just, it's nice to know that we can sort of backdate things, you know, where like, okay, we've done something silly. So say like for me, when I was younger, I took this drug, Roaccutane, you'd know Accutane, gnarly skin.
Gnarly.
And so detoxing that as an adult with homeopathy, having like acne come back up, and I'm like, oh my gosh, but that's the power of being able to re-expose your body. Yeah. Get it out, get your body back on track and really sort of like, yeah, get those chains broken of suppression. You want to get it out, all the emotions, all the toxicity as much as possible.
Right. It's a good way of putting it. Like our generation and our parents' generation and their parents' generation for sure is generations of deep suppression. You know, obviously psychological, emotional, and then we have pharmaceutical, right? And like, I don't know how you were particularly raised, but our generation was raised with, you suppress a fever, you suppress a cough, suppress, suppress, suppress. And so, yeah, I like the idea of calling on homeopathy there's a term I use in my coaching called feeling your feelings all the way through to completion. And it's like the same thing, like feeling your symptoms all the way through to completion and actually completing it. Yeah, that's awesome. So, okay. So, oh, sorry, did you want to say something?
No. But I was thinking, you know, where it's like feel your feelings, right, and get them out. What I also love about homeopathy is that there are so many people who are actually so suppressed, and a lot of men, but also women, but they can't even actually access those emotions. Like they've got to work really hard to try and like get them out. Whereas you can give them a well-indicated homeopathic remedy. And so say my husband, best example, the amount of purging of things that I never would think that I would see. You know, we've been together like probably 9 years at that point where he's actually taking a remedy. And, you know, and it is, it's tears over just childhood things that, you know, as an adult, you think like, oh my God, like, you know, we were laughing while he was crying at the same time because he couldn't believe that he was still upset about these like really, you know, child things that he was going through. But it is all the tears not cried, all the times that you had to like stifle it down. And it can really access it. Whereas if you had asked him honestly if there was like anything under the surface, truly his genuine thing would have been like no, like happy with life, happy with everything. And then it was like, oh, here it comes.
So is this, it sounds like this bypasses the forebrain.
Yeah. Big time.
Yeah. So let's pivot to how one may be interested in using homeopathy for birth, postpartum, mothering. Obviously, that's primarily who listens to my podcast. I mean, birth workers as well. And then, you know, feel free to pitch your program, which I caught wind of. That sounds really cool if women want to learn more. But you started talking a little bit about birth trauma and along the same lines of what you're saying, of moving it through, you know, getting stuff expressed. But yeah, tell us how you've seen that.
For sure. So for one, if anybody's struggling to get pregnant, definitely homeopathy can help. And you're going to clear out a lot of your load in just that process before you get pregnant, which is beautiful because then we can sort of hand on our best energetics that we can for our bubs. During pregnancy, there is the cell salts, you know, the tissue salts, you know, you can do a program like that, which people love. And that's just giving bubs like this boost of these crude doses, essential in building blocks of, you know, brain, spinal cord, all of that. So just really supportive. But really around the birth process where I would say people would want to have some remedies on hand just in case. I personally used Arnica. Colophyllum was a big one. And so from 38 weeks on, colophyllum is involved in really toning the uterus. So getting ready for just long, strong, effectual contractions. In people who do that sort of prep prior, it's because birth is so individual, right? And you can't compare one birth to another because you all women are different. We've all got our own unique experiences. But say with my births, just so blissful. And I do think it's to do with the homeopathics, you know, being used in that as well. But yeah, colophyllum, just beautiful. And if somebody was going through labor and then their contraction stopped, but they sort of wanted to try and stimulate that, keep that going, the colophyllum would be the remedy that you would take during labor just to kick them back in. And you'd stop taking it as soon as it reinstates, you relax back into it and just like go with the process. But that could be helpful if somebody's, you know, if it was blowing out over days and they were just really uncomfortable. Arnica, postpartum healing. If anybody has issues expelling the placenta, remedies like Sicali, absolutely phenomenal, pushing all of it out. And then if there was any issue around like retained placenta, if anybody, you know, we needed to be sure that there was nothing still, I would still take Sicali, make sure it's all out. And then it depends on the birthing process. If mum or bub had any trauma in that, if there was any shock, fear, you know, remedies like aconite can, you know, because you can see if a baby's really startled, then, you know, a remedy just to like soothe that. If you have like a colicky baby, definitely remedies around that. Like every part of postpartum support, you could use a homeopathic remedy. If your milk's not coming in, the homeopath would want to know, okay, let me know what's going on for you. If you've done all of the holistic sort of like relax, you know, doing all of those other aspects, but it's still not coming, then the homeopathic remedy could be very supportive to support that like milk formation. Our hormones postpartum are normally like a little bit choppy here and there. Remedies like sepia. So if you're looking at your classic burned out mum who is doing everything right there, and it can seem mundane sometimes, you know, we're cooking, we're cleaning, we're doing the things, and maybe we want to do it. We want to be like mumming good, but also on the inside, we're like, oh my God, like I'm just so fed up. The mums who are like the husband, just like, don't touch me, like get away from me, and sort of even resenting, you know, hubbies sometimes, you know, just feeling that way postpartum, CP is going to be huge. So it also supports the thyroid, which for a lot of people postpartum can be thrown out. And just, yeah, for a lot of that. But it depends on the presentation for what remedy you might need. If it was a really gnarly birth and it was interfered with, you know, especially for people in hospital, I'm sure a lot of the people who listen to yours are doing it, you know, the otherwise, or maybe they're trying to heal from some of the things that did happen historically. Remedies like staphysagria are brilliant. You know, women who were forced into an induction, a C-section, an episiotomy, and their poor body feels beaten, bruised, and they are just struggling to get through that, massively helped by remedies like staphysagria. Opium, if there was, it's a homeopathic remedy made from that. But, you know, some people, they can have such a traumatizing experience that it's almost like their spirit left their body for a bit. It's like they are checked out and they're not quite back in their body. So the postpartum mum who needs opium, she might have been, you know, the epidural, maybe like drugs, you know, in the system, but she's slightly detached. And it's like the lights are on, but nobody's home. And it's like, are you okay? Like, hey, are you in there? Like, they're not really themselves. So a remedy like opium brings them back into their body to function more effectively. If you have a bub, you know, some mums postpartum are really wired and they can't sleep, you know, they're hypervigilant and they're watching the baby sleep, you know, and they'll be up and they're saying like, I'm not sleeping because I'm just like constantly watching and checking on the baby. A remedy like Cocculus, and it's just going to soothe their spirit, let them relax. Okay, sleep, bubba's sleeping, it's okay. All that sort of stuff. And just a simple remedy like that can prevent someone after like a couple of months of staying up way too much.
Yeah.
It could be, yeah, heading for a breakdown, you know, you got to try and sleep. Oh, so yeah,
in the less than that. So how, in, but you don't give the remedy to a newborn.
You can, you definitely can. So if they had colic. Yeah. So let's pretend the baby had like colic, cramping pains. You could, depending on how you dose. So we do liquids. This has brandy in it though. So I would dose in water. So say you get like a tiny little shot glass of water, you put in a drop of Cholecystis, and then you could get a tiny little dropper and just a little drop into the mouth under the tongue, you know, of water that will absorb. And you can see it from these bubs. They might have their feet drawn up, you know, they're trying to get pressure on their belly and they're in agony. They take that remedy and within 10 minutes, it's just like they've completely relaxed and they've stopped crying. And the parents are like, what the fuck? Because yeah, it's so painful.
I attended a birth with a mother who liked homeopathy, and her baby was so bruised, like the most extreme facial and head bruising I've ever seen. It was fine, you know, like it was fine, but it was really hardcore. And she put arnica on his fontanelle. She didn't put it in his mouth, and I wasn't like involved, she was just doing this, but she put it on his fontanelle, and you know, who knows, I think it would have healed anyway, but she swore by it. It was, I mean, they changed so quickly, but it was pretty cool to see him the next day.
Yeah,
there's value to that, like
on the skin there definitely is a line of topical homeopathics. I don't think they're as much, like they're not researched as heavily. So people, we do it often under the tongue because we know that that works, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if it's just as effective, you know, and especially, I don't know, a spiritual center like that, open fontanelles, probably straight into the baby's vital force. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's remarkable. How even mothers treating themselves, and obviously, you know, that we are breastfeeding, but you're often sharing a field, you know, with that, because we spend so much time with them in that postpartum that our field can even overcome theirs. So if it was a mother and she was experiencing, you know, postpartum anxiety obviously is huge these days, the bubs can absorb a lot of that anxiety. And so treating mum and bub a lot of the time is really helpful, you know, so that the kids don't grow into like really anxious, you know, kids as well. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like there's basically a remedy for everything.
pretty much.
Right. And it is it can be quite complex. And it seems like in my exposure to it, just the slightest shift of a symptom could potentially mean a totally different remedy.
Yeah.
And there's also, would you speak to, because there's also like constitutional remedies, right? Where it's like I guess constitution of the child or the adult, and that can, I don't know anything about that, but I've heard mothers who are into that be like, oh, I found my constitutional remedy for this kid and she's regulated or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's often the goal. Like, we're looking for that one remedy that fits the totality of the person. And that's where you see the most miracles, right? Like, when you give that to someone. So I'll tell you my story when the homeopath found Myers. But obviously, my sister's was Staphylococcus at that point. You know, that was the disease state. That's what you want to treat. The other sort of homeopathic treatment, we'd call that more like therapeutic, you know, probably prescribing, you know, during birth. It's more acute. It's seasonal, situational. And to be honest, if you don't interfere homeopathically, usually the body's got it on its own, but it might just take longer. So say like with your bub with the bruising, probably the body would have, you know, done that anyway, but the homeopathics gives it that stimulus to just, it's more rapid. And sometimes maybe it is deeper healing as well, if they need it, if there was, you know, shock, trauma, sort of thing. But with the constitutional aspect and looking for that well-fitting classical, when I went to that homeopath after my sister and we sit down in the same coffee shop and he's like, all right, tell me, you know, 90 minutes worth all about you. So I'm going through and he's like, okay, tell me about your earlier life. You know, what's the most traumatic thing that's ever happened to you? I'm like, oh, my parents divorced when I was young and it was really gnarly. And then going between houses, like the whole thing was extremely stressful for me. That would be the hardest thing, you know, in my life. I said, other than that, really pretty sweet. And, you know, he's like, okay, physically what things? And I said, I took Roaccutane. That's probably the gnarliest. And then I get cold sores. And so with all of that, then he's looking at my personality even. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because when you go through these homeopathic remedies, and let's say there's a top, let's say 60, I would say, that are Polycrests, and they are like well-known, full-blown pictures that people can study and you can match them to the people, like you'd recognize them. And in this one called Sulfur, it's got this real affinity for people who are like really philosophically minded, right? Like, and they're usually really messy people. They can be quite, you know, academic-ish, like a lot of the time, like in the books, liking thinking about these sorts of things, but they're sometimes like not very grounded. And it was funny because like that fits with Sulfur. That's what he ended up prescribing me. And it really was, you know, when I was in high school, like my number one subject was philosophy and reason. I love to think about why people are the way they are, why the world is the way it is, blah, 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 all this metaphysical. And I was like, it's so interesting that that's actually in a remedy picture, that there are people like that. And it is true that you can be somebody who's so fixated on these sorts of ideas up here that, you know, I can forget my husband's birthday, you know, on a year and not remember until halfway through the day, go, oh my gosh, it's your birthday. Do you know what I mean? Whereas a lot of women have probably planned his presents and his card like the week before. So it just shows we're all so unique and different with, you know, what goes on for us. And
but also not that unique because
there's people. Yes. So true. And when he gave,
probably a better word for it.
Yeah, fully. And when I took that remedy that night, so I blew up with all of the cold sores. I blew up with a mad head cold, but also emotionally, here I was in my early 20s crying about my parents' divorce. And it came out of nowhere. I'm saying like we were at dinner and sort of eating and it is almost like word vomit out of my mouth about, you know, to my mom, oh, do you remember when you did this? And you made me late on purpose to my dad's. And my mom's like, what the hell? Like this was 20 years ago. Like one, how are you remembering all this? And why are you, you know, and I did not even like connect that it could have anything to do with the remedy. Cause at that point, I'm obviously so new to homeopathy. I don't know what it is, what it does. I would never think that there was something that existed that could even do that, cause that in someone. And so that's more your constitutional. And so I would say that I am inherently quite a sulfur. Whereas let's say a phosphorus, right? A woman who's inherently a phosphorus, they're usually very magnetic. They often can be really intuitive, quite prophetic. You know, it's like they're all their natural giftings and they can be like really, you know, beautiful and like delicate and prone to anxiety. And so, yeah, like you said, these archetypes, we tend to resonate, you know, with some more than others, sort of inherently like our constitution. It's a bit controversial in homeopathy because some homeopaths would say there's no such thing as a constitution. Like it's only the state that you're in right now. So they would say, okay, I'm a sulfur, you know, right now.
Well, okay. That I could see that having some truth to it. Apparently I'm a Natmer. What does that mean?
So Natmers, it's table
salt. Like horoscopes. It's like a circle.
tell me about myself. So your typical Natmer, and who knows, you might have been in Natmer phase, but your typical Natmer with like the table salt, they can be prone to, say, in earlier life, sometimes there is a disconnect with like emotional things with the parents. Maybe it wasn't like as vulnerable and like, usually an adult Natmer, they can be a little bit withdrawn. They like to deal with things definitely themselves, but they're not likely, say the Natmer woman is not likely to go to her mum and sort of be like, oh my gosh, mum, I'm going through such a hard time, and like comfort or cry and like get that real vulnerability, you know, like some people have. So your Natmers are usually like pretty compassionate. A lot of Natmers would be nurses, as an example, salt of the earth type people, like work hard, support, very compassionate. They can have a history of suppressing their own grief though, you know, just like but yeah, they can be prone to like fluid balances, like edema,
like being swollen?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like water balance in the body.
Interesting.
Hay fever, allergies, and have some thyroid things, but yeah.
I was going to ask you about thyroid. Like, have you seen homeopathy support hypothyroidism?
Definitely. That's so cool. Yeah. And it's oftentimes the remedies that are made from things. So say like sepia, it's made from the ink of a cuttlefish and it's a massive postpartum remedy. And obviously thyroids notoriously kick off with some issues sometimes in postpartum. But it's the iodine, I think, the constituents of that energy that are so supportive. So Natmer, brilliant, kelp carb, sepia. We've got a remedy called thyroidinum, which is actually made from the tissue of a thyroid.
Cool.
Yeah.
So like little potions.
Fully.
I mean, I've really seen incredible responses in my children. And in myself, like I have so many memories over the years of trying stuff and it not working or not doing anything, let's say that, and then finding the right one and it just completing. And the first couple times being kind of a natural skeptic, I was like, oh, well, interesting timing, you know, but some of them have been so obvious and so, you know, like a migraine that's so bad. And then three rounds of belladonna and it's just gone, which never in my life have I experienced migraines just like out of nowhere, just done, you know. Yeah. And it's not always belladonna for my migraines. Like there's a couple different ones depending on everything. Anyway, I mean, it is.
I personally would like encourage everybody to be skeptical until they see it for themselves. Like I think that's a healthy way to be. But I've had some cases where, because it's funny, obviously, my dad being a doctor, when we talk about it, and he's like, darling, I think that when people are chatting with you, like, of course, after like an hour of like airing all of these things, he's like, I think that they just need that connection. They need to be heard. They need, and that's what actually then they go forward and have these crazy healing results. And I'm like, well, cute that you think that like conversation with me would be that powerful to reverse full-blown pathology that they've had diagnosed. But at the same time, there are patients who, like I've had some, I had this lawyer once and such severe eczema that she had to like actually quit her job because she was like, She would get into a scratching fit at work. It would be bleeding. She would want to cry. She like couldn't type. It was just that cracked red. Imagine like, yeah, you can't wash up. You have, like, your hands are just, oh. And we'd been trying these different remedies, and like I'd thought carcinosin was a good fit, and like nothing happened. So I'm like, oh God, what am I going to do? So I'm like, okay, I'm doing more skin remedies like graphites, petroleum, like for the cracked and all of this. Nothing was working. And then she told me that actually as a teenager, you know, she actually was quite, you know, suicidal and a lot of responsibility. She was like the oldest child, and she just remembers like really clearly thinking like, I could stay or I could not, like I'm really, you know. And I was like, that is very interesting to me. And it gave me an insight into one of our remedies where that's so. And she sent me a photo of her eczema the next day, and you could almost see it literally like just retracting up. It just started to heal from the bottom up, and within days it was gone. And we're talking like, at that point, maybe she'd had it for like a couple of years, but like it was really severe. And so it just confirms when you're a homeopath that until you get that right remedy, you don't get that depth of curative healing. A lot of the times we do get it, like it's a real art to try and find the right remedy. There's lots of pivoting. And so if people are to go to a homeopath, you are. And if you go to a homeopath once and you don't get the results you want, just, it is something where you do sometimes have to troubleshoot. Doctors have it easy. It's like, oh yeah, you've got this, take this drug and take it this often. Like they just like pump it out. Whereas the homeopath, they've got to figure it out. And it can be complex, but when you get there, it's like bubble.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Well, tell us a little bit about what you offer in the world before we wrap.
If anybody's into, like, in regards to birthing, we do have a birth kit, which is like you can read through and learn about all these different remedies. So, say, Pulsatilla, Sicali, Sepia, Phytolacca, Kali Phos, Kali Carb, Ipecac, you know, things like morning sickness.
Yeah, make like a rap about it.
Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. But yeah, people with hyperemesis. I had a girlfriend over a couple of weeks ago, and she had like really bad HG. She's like, I am just actually dying. And I was like, I sent her home with a bunch. I was like, just add it in. And she'd never used homeopathy before and like pretty skeptical. And she's like, what the hell? She's like, well, last night was the first night I woke up and didn't puke. So she's like, I don't want to like jinx it, but. And then the next day she's like, I cannot even believe that I feel like a human again. She's a third baby, severe HG, and she's really excited. So, you know, we do have different kits. We've got like kits for parents at home. So not birth kits, just like first aid. So general things that we go through with our kids, gastro, fevers, ear infections, it's just a first line of support. So the kits are awesome to have. And you can teach yourself, you know, from the booklet, you sort of are learning constantly about it. You might feel a bit nervous at the start, but once you get used to prescribing, handing it out, people become like really great at it. But then we also teach people. So anybody who wants to be a homeopath, there is a massive influx of people who want to do homeopathy because one, we're realizing around the world that what we're doing ain't it. Antibiotics and steroids are just not the answer. So more and more people are looking for solutions. And so homeopaths are just booked out. Like there's not enough of us. So we are training people up. So that first homeopath who treated me and my sister, my old uni lecturer, now we work together in our Remedy Academy, and he's still just this brilliant, like everything guy. So yeah, it's a 2-year course, and yeah, people graduate as homeopaths. You open up your private practice. You could work in fertility postpartum. Yeah, I just think it's bloody awesome. Really?
Very cool. And that's a live program. When does that run?
Yeah. So our next round, so we've got 570 students currently doing the 2 years. The next round starts September 2026. Enrollments close. So we've got about a year until enrollments close, and then we'll go through that whole cycle again, graduate everybody. And yeah, so that one's called Remedy Academy, like RMDY Academy. Yes. So that's that. And people don't need prereqs too. You know, a lot of people come from, yeah, like a nursing background maybe, but we've got males who are like tradesmen, you know, electricians who are like, I want a complete change of life. I want to help men. I want to contribute. And I think the way that the world's going, just getting so like weird and wild and, you know, all the things, it's definitely something that you want to know. I do think that it is like definitely a medicine of the future, but for your own like healing and yeah, looking after yourself as a family, I just think you want to know a homeopath at least. If you don't learn it yourself, know someone who knows it.
Yeah. I mean, having the book and having the kit, it's not like that complicated.
Not for acutes.
Right. For acute.
Yeah, exactly.
So was this your first year?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yep. I know. Outrageous, really. In homeopathic circles, it's the largest intake of students probably ever.
How long did you enroll and promote for?
I think people have been following my Instagram where I talk about homeopathy a lot. So people might have been there hearing me talk about it, but we probably decided to launch it, I think, 9 months exactly before we launched it. So that was us, yeah, talking about, hey, guys, we got this coming up. And yeah, so that was that. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, we will leave in the show notes, you know, all the links to your stuff. And yeah, I hope this piqued your women's interest. You know, those of you who listened and who are moms and birth workers, it's such an easy tool to have in your back pocket and something really fun to play with.
I love it. Thank you so much for chatting with me.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, women, I hope you enjoyed the show today. You can support this podcast by donating to it through the link in the show notes below, and of course, leaving an awesome review on whatever platform you listen on. The more reviews, the more visibility the show gets. So let's spread the good word of free birth. Don't forget, you can watch all of my podcast interviews on YouTube and see the women as they tell their birth and power stories. And you will also find our viral free birth collection of epic raw birth videos on our YouTube channel, so make sure you're subscribed. We always have a lot going on at Free Birth Society, and you can find out about all of it at freebirthsociety.com. And I am at Free Birth Society on Instagram. Please opt into my newsletter below so that you don't miss a thing. We offer courses on free birth, sovereign birth work, as well as one-on-one coaching, women's retreats, so much. Our exclusive private vetted membership, The Lighthouse, is definitely something to check out if you are looking for a community of wise sisters to get guidance from and to meet in real life. Together we rise, sisters. We must speak our stories fully, claim our lives, and support one another. This is the Living Revolution, and I am so grateful to be in it with all of you. Till next time.